Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tram. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tram. Today we start learning the halachas of Nida. This is Siman Kuf Nun Gimel 153 in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. In fact, the next 10 simanim, the next 10 chapters and episodes that we're going to be learning together are going to be surrounding the halachas of Taharas HaMishpacha, purity of the home. This is one of the fundamental aspects of the Jewish home. This is one of the reasons that the Jewish people have managed to continue in the diaspora. It is one of the key central aspects defining what it means to be living a Jewish life. Shabbos, Kashrus, and Taharas Mishpacha are the central legs upon which our Judaism rests today. And this, people have made incredible sacrifices. Couples have made incredible sacrifices to be able to keep Taharas Mishpacha. Just a quick introduction to this topic while we get there is, number one, is that this is the Kitzur of Shulchan Aruch. That means to say it is a summary of the Shulchan Aruch. This is a topic which one could spend, and when learning Smicha, one spends years learning. This is not a simple topic, and therefore these recordings of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch on these topics should not be in place of Chosan or Kala lessons. I know somebody who once tried to do that. That is not appropriate. There's so much more. One also needs to have a relationship to somebody who knows these halachas to be able to ask and continue to have a relationship of learning and how they relate to intimacy. There's a lot over here as well. This is going to be a framework within which one is able to ask questions. This is a very, very important section in halacha. And so let's just start today. Today we're going to look at just two basic topics. One is becoming nida, and number two is what's called harachokos, distancing or guardrails, which are placed during this time. So just a very basic background quickly. So every woman in a healthy situation is born with two ovaries, which contain millions of eggs. And when she reaches puberty, she begins the ovulation cycle roughly every 28 days. Until she becomes pregnant or reaches menopause, a healthy woman will emit an egg which will travel through the fallopian tubes into the uterus. The uterus prepares itself for the fertilized egg to be fertilized, and it thickens its walls. And if the egg is not fertilized, and then it will shed those walls, and that will come out as the form of blood from the vaginal canal in a woman that will render her a nida. Now, without going into much more of the biology right now, just for the basics. So let's understand what this is. So in the Torah, what does this mean? So the Torah describes this isha ki tiyeh zova, a woman who has a flow, dam tiyeh zova bivsara, and the blood flows onto her skin. Shivas yamim tiyeh benidasa. For 7 days, she will remain as a nida. This is what the Torah says. So a woman is considered a nida for 7 days after having her menstrual flow, which is roughly once every month under normal circumstances. What is the ramification of this? So the Torah says that during this period of time, among many other halachas, one of the things is that a man and a woman who are married may not be together during the period of nida. Man and a woman are not allowed to be together. And the Torah says that if they do a nichrusu shnei mikere avamam, if consensually they are together during this time, that is considered a very serious problem, which is punishable even by kores, which is a spiritual being cut off, and it has other applications which are very terrifying as well. Similarly, if a man is if there's intimacy which incurs touching just without actual intercourse, there is makos, there's lashes for this as well. So it's a very serious time. There is this is something which is self-policed, which means that nobody else is peeking in or knowing, and therefore the stakes are pretty high for a couple to be careful about these levels of shmira, of guarding themselves during this period of time. How long does being a nida last? So the Torah describes it as a 7-day period, and the Gemara explains that the Benos Israel Ichmiru La'atzman, that the daughters of Israel treat the state of nidus like ziva. Ziva is another type of flow that's described by the Torah, and that requires not just 7 days, but 7 clean days, which means, we'll discuss this in the future chapters, that it needs to be that the flow of blood is abated, and then there are 7 clean days, 7 days, there is no flow of blood there afterwards as well. What does, and then a woman would need to go to the mikveh, and that is the only way to exit the nidah cycle. What needs to happen to render a woman nidah? So from the Torah, it seems clear, and based on the teachings of our tradition found in the Gemara, that the blood needs to come from the makor, so it needs to be uterine blood. It can't be blood from other places. The blood needs to actually leave the uterus, right? So it needs to actually leave the uterus and enter into the vaginal canal. The woman needs to have a form of haragasha, that she needs to have a sensation that's associated with this. We'll discuss this in a moment. And also, there are different types of discharges. A woman does not just shed blood. There's all kinds of other enzymes or liquids that are emitted, and only specifically blood is a problem, and specific types of blood, which requires a level of expertise to be able to understand and differentiate as well. So how do we know if a woman has a hargasha, this sensation? So there's a lot of discussion and debate in halacha as to what this hargasha means. It doesn't mean that she has some sort of tremoring sensation, that a woman that there's certain experiences of zivas davalach, or some sort of sensation of a movement of a liquid. There's a whole discussion in halacha. What is fascinating is that many of the hargashas which are described in the earlier commentators are not things that women typically experience today. So what is considered the hargasha today? So today, generally speaking, we assume that the hargasha is the way a woman would normally experience her menstruation, her regular period, which means to say is the typical understanding today is if, when we're not talking about a person who's on the pill, we talk about a person who's not being influenced by any other hormonal treatments, would be what's called ribui dam. Ribui dam means to say that a woman doesn't just see a little bit, but she sees a lot of blood, and a lot of blood generally understood is about the amount of space and material that will take up half a dollar bill or six quarters next to each other, and that is considered a ribui dam. And if that's what a woman experiences, it doesn't make a difference on what substance that is or what it's found on. If there is a ribui dam, she is a nidah midoraisa, and there's no ways to out of that. That becomes a normal sensation. What becomes an interesting discussion in halach is what happens if a woman is on the pill and the pill regulates her cycle in such a way that she's not seeing a ribui dam, but she'll see maybe a little bit of blood every X amount of days, every 20 days, every 30 days, every 25 days, she sees a little bit of blood. Many poskim say that becomes the her natural way of seeing because of being regulated by the pill, and that will create nidus itself. What if a woman feels her womb is open but sees no blood? So in this case, so she has a sensation without seeing blood. So in this case, she's considered a nidah, which means say ein psichas makor b'li dam. And we assume that if the cervix opened, there must be have been blood, even if we can't see the blood, or she can't demonstrate it on a bedikha cloth either as well. This is uncommon today because women do not have the sensation as described at the times of the Gemara. However, this is applicable when a woman goes for an exam and the cervix is opened. One has to ask what instrument it was and how big the cervical opening was when this happened, and this will affect this as well. Now, we move on to the second concept, which is that of stains. This is the most common application of this, is what happens if a woman does not have let's say it's not a menstruation, but she sees a stain. So whether this is during the course of the regular part of the month or it's in the process of Tahara and she sees a stain, what is the halacha over there? So if the stain cannot be attributed to an external source, then she is considered a nidah midrabbanan, and that will render her a nidah. What should be done if the stain is not clearly red or it's hard to know what it is? This is the case where a person needs to be consulted, a rav needs to be consulted to ascertain a number of details, the color of it, the size of it as well. And part of this is the dispensations when it comes to a stain as opposed to a nidos itself. When a person finds a stain, there's three requirements for a stain to be concerning. Number one, needs to be larger than a gris, which is essentially a penny size. It needs to be on a white substance, and it needs to be on a davar hamakabel tumah, like a garment, as opposed to a tissue, which is going to be thrown out. So if it has to have all three of those for it to be a concern, which is why when a woman is not during her menstrual periods, during the rest of the month, a woman generally wears tzivonim, colored garments, to avoid stains becoming an issue. Of course, if there's a ribui dam, or if it's a time when she would usually menstruate based on the pill, then that doesn't help because that's considered a ribudam. Similarly, if a woman does a bedikah, if she does an internal examination with a cloth and she finds blood, that's not considered a stain. That will, if she finds blood on that, even a small pinprick of blood, that is sufficient to render her a nidah, because we're concerned for what's called a masked hargosha. That there was a hargosha, there was a sensation that happened. And so internal examinations, will any blood found there is a problem. External blood, which is found, has a higher bar because it's rabbinic nidos, which requires those three requirements, which are, it has to be larger than a penny size, it has to be on white, and it has to be on a davar makabel tuma. Obviously, this makes opens up the many, many questions. What about if it's found, if blood's found on the toilet, on the tissue? Well, these are all questions that need to be asked under the specific circumstances. In our very brief summary right now, we're going through, the Kitzur puts together the last topic, which is of this siman, which is harachakos, which literally means distancings. These are frameworks within which couples operate. I'm going to just briefly three observations about this. The Torah tells us a man may not come close to a woman in the state of nida, which means that the Torah requires making these harachakos. The rabbis gave us what these harachakos are, and there's three ways of looking at them. Number one is they are guardrails. Yes, a person says, I'm a very good driver. I can drive at high speeds on the highway, officer. But the officer is going to say, I don't care how good a driver you are. The rules are made for the average person. So you may think you are fine in these circumstances, but guardrails are made across the board. So a couple may say, we don't really need these. We can control ourselves. Yes, that may be true. You may actually be a really great driver, but that's not how rules are made in general. So the rule, and there's a reason for these rules. Number two is, it also helps with deepening emotional intimacy. If a couple's way of expressing their love to each other is only physically and through physical intimacy, then in a certain sense it eclipses emotional intimacy. By having these distances, it forces a couple to have communication which is absolutely not physical. It's only emotional. It allows a couple to develop their emotional intimacy in a much more profound way rather than just being a physical connection, especially at the beginning parts of marriage. And finally, and the most important, I think, is what's called deepening of physical intimacy, what it can be. Meaning to say, if physical intimacy is only sexual intercourse, it's only when a couple are together in such a way, then in a certain sense, that becomes the only thing that intimacy is. But what happens if intimacy is handing each other something? What happens if physical intimacy is, if real intimacy can even be just pouring each other a cup of wine? What happens, all these things that we're about to learn with, when they're taken away during the period of nidos, it is important to realize that during the period of non-nidos, when a couple are able to be together, these are all now reaffirmed as very profound aspects of what the relationship can and should be. So as an example, a wife gets home from the mikveh, and there's kids in the house running around, and so it's, you know, not the appropriate time to hug or arm each other at that point in time, but she hands him her coat and he hangs it up. That itself is an act of intimacy, and the Torah is educating us to what that can mean. Let's jump straight into these. What kind of approach is forbidden during nidah? So any type of lightheadedness or suggestive speech, joking in a way of frivolousness, which leads to suggestive behavior, is not allowed during this period of time. Is seclusion, is yichud allowed when a couple or a woman is in nidah? The answer is yes. Seeing as the relationship is ongoing, this is what's called pas besala. They know that they're going to be permitted again at some point in the future. What form of contact is forbidden? So they're not allowed to touch each other at all, not even fingers, and they're not allowed to pass objects to each other directly, not even objects, not even throwing directly to each other. May they eat together at the same table? The answer is yes, but they need to have a noticeable change, like a siman, which is usually an item which is not usually in front of them, between the two of them, or if she changes a place. If she usually eats out of, if they usually eat out of the same bowl, then having two separate plates is sufficient. May a husband drink from his wife's cup during nidah? The answer is no, unless somebody else drank between them. So like they pass around the cup, she drinks, then somebody else drinks, and then he drinks, then it's not an act of intimacy. If he doesn't know that she had just drank from it, so he comes into the room, she'd been drinking from this cup, and he picks it up without knowing it was hers, she does not need to stop him, because clearly that's not suggestive by him drinking that cup. Yeah, there's no insinuation here. May she drink from his cup, she's allowed to drink from his cup afterwards. What about eating her leftovers? This is also asr. And but let's say she was eating and she didn't get to a certain piece of chicken, he can put it on his plate and eat it there. But if she already started eating it, that's not allowed on the same plate, it's not allowed either. May they sleep together on the same bed? They may not each sleep on the same bed, even if they're clothed and even if they are on separate mattresses. May they sleep in separate beds that are touching? No, the beds must have a noticeable space between the two of them if they are face to face. May one sit on each other's bed, so a husband may not sit or sleep on his wife's bed, even if she's not there. A wife may not sleep in his bed, but she is allowed to sit on his bed. Generally speaking, we're going to see that the harchakos are more stringent on the man, because the man, generally speaking, is the one who is more motivated to have a physical relationship and needs more guardrails. May they sit together on a long bench. So if the bench is, you know, anchored to the ground, they don't feel each other like a park bench, no problem. But if it's a moving bench, it's a swing in the yard, then that is a problem. May they take you to get a ride together in a wagon or a boat. So because in the old days, these used to be pretty, you know, pretty flimsy, you could definitely feel each other's movement on the same bench. If it was a leisure tour, it would not be allowed. For business, it would be allowed. But what about cars today? So Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that if they're separate seats, it's fine. If they're in the back, as long as they're not touching each other, it's not a concern. May a husband look at his wife's body during the nidah, so he may not look at usually covered areas of her body, but he may look at uncovered areas. May he smell perfume or listen to her sing, not during this period of time. May she wear regular clothes during nidahs? Yes. But although some suggest having different clothes during this period of time in the month, although that seems not to be the practice generally speaking. What household tasks may she not do in front of her husband? So she may not pour wine for him or place it before him or make his bed. And these are permitted if he's not in the room at that point in time. She may also not wash his face, hands, or feet. May her husband pour wine for her? No, he may not even send the cup of wine to her, which was done a koshal bracha, that's seen as an act of intimacy, and this requires a little bit of dexterity when it comes to kiddush, as well as a few options which are suggested. May she care for her sick husband if no one else is available? Yes, but not with no direct contact. So she can use an object, wear gloves, but she may lift or support him, but not wash his hands, face, or feet. May he care for his wife if she's sick during the time of nidus? The answer is no, unless it's an emergency and there's no one else. It's seen generally this is more stringent on the man towards women. Until when must these restrictions be observed? This is true during the time of nidus, during the time of the Zayin Nikim, those 7 days afterwards, and even after the clean days when if she has not yet gone to the mikvah. So this all applies before mikvah. Are there any other restrictions? So some had the practice that women did not come to shul during the period of nidus, unless it's Yomim Noraim or the bris or their child or an offer for sheva brachas, but she should and can certainly can daven. And this seems not to be the practice generally held today. Some say she should not go to the cemetery during the time of nidus itself as well. These are some of the backgrounds to these halachas. Obviously, there's a lot of questions which are raised because of this. But with this, we close. Have a wonderful and meaningful